Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Good morning. It's Wednesday, May 12th, and you're listening to the College Football Daily. My name is Chris Hummer, pitch hitting today for Trey Scott. We're going to discuss something that seemingly everyone has an opinion on in college football. Playoff expansion. There's a legitimate news hook here, by the way. A few weeks ago, buried 16 paragraphs deep within a press release from the College Football Playoff, there was a public admission that the playoff is exploring potential expansion scenarios from the current four-team format. This includes 6 teams, 8 teams, 10 teams, 12 teams, and even 16 teams. There's a lot to discuss when it comes to potential playoff structure and a change of that magnitude. So in order to shed some light on the subject, we're turning to national college football writer Brandon Marcello, who covered the topic in depth recently. Brandon, before we dive into the specifics of some of the scenarios you laid out in your article, can you shed some light on what's happening with the College Football Playoff Committee right now and a timeline, if there is one, for potential expansion?
Yeah, you know, what's crazy, you mentioned the 16 paragraphs. The 17th paragraph, no one knows this, but it mentioned that a comet was heading toward Earth. That was so ridiculous. But anyway, yeah, we're getting into actually a kind of a crucial moment of time here coming up in June. The working group, which consists of Bob Bowlesby, the Big 12 commissioner, and SEC commissioner Greg Sankey, among others, they're kind of trying to whittle down these 63 possibilities that was mentioned in that press release of expansion, anywhere from 6 to 16 teams. And it's possible, not necessarily likely, but possible, that June 22nd, the working group could approach the board of managers and say, hey, we've kind of whittled this down to some of our best options based off of our own research, and you guys can decide whether we need to vote on it, pass it up the chain, the hierarchy, so to speak, in the college football playoff, and maybe push this thing so forward that maybe as early this fall, there is a final decision reached. Now, of course, there's a bunch of logistics involved in this. Primarily, one, getting everybody on board. It has to be unanimous. But secondly, ESPN, which owns the current TV contract for another 5 years, they've got to get them on board as well. So there's a lot of, I guess I would say, pre-work to be done before they actually get to work on this. But make no mistake, these conversations have been happening for the better part of the last 2 years. And I think they're finally prepared enough to a point to, one, finally admit it in a press release that they're talking about expansion, but secondly, actually to start moving forward and potentially make some decisions and well, at least start that decision-making process.
I think an important thing to note is TV makes the world go round in this marketplace with kind of television rights. And I feel like anytime I've ever had a discussion with somebody and they're trying to brush aside the possibility of expansion, they mention that contract, which I believe expires in 2026. So if the College Football Playoff Committee did decide to go forward with expansion, how did they kind of get around that date and that contract, which is, as I understand, pretty ironclad with ESPN, and potentially expand early?
Yeah, you know, this is a situation, as much as we talk about, as you said, this deal being ironclad and can't really be reopened, if everybody acts in good faith and they want to come to the table, they'll come to the table and rework that deal or just throw it completely out and start up a new one. But it's such a complex deal and there's others involved. It isn't just as simple as like, hey, you're getting more games, here you go. Well, ESPN's got to pay more for those games. And the one estimate was that if they were to expand to, say, an 18 playoff, they would double the field. They would probably have to pay anywhere between $400 and $500 million extra per year. And remember, this is a 12-year, $7.2 billion TV contract that deals, that's just for four games. So you're talking about doubling it, but also doubling the price, and probably even more, to be quite honest, if this thing goes to something larger than eight teams, which we can talk about later. And, you know, the question is why wouldn't ESPN be willing to pay that? Well, they would most likely be like, hey, let's go ahead and do this and let's pay it. But it's about timing. You know, why can't we wait 2-3 more years before we do this and reopen things? We're making good money on this already. The ratings are fine with us. We can hold out with this for another 3 or 4 years, or maybe even to the end of the contract in 2026. And let's just wait until then to have this finalized. But I think there is some push there when it comes to the TV side, where I wouldn't say it's panic, but they understand that ratings have kind of plateaued. They flatlined a little bit, even though they're still high, because what drives these prices isn't necessarily the diehard fan turning on the television to watch college football in the playoff. It's the casual viewers, you know, the people who only watch the national championship game or the playoff and no other football, college football games that year because it's an event. Well, they're turning on the TV every January and they're seeing the same teams over and over again, and they're seeing the same teams win the national championship game year after year. And so in a lot of ways, I guess to put this simply, they're watching reruns, you know, when they're expecting new programming every January. And so that number is kind of plateaued, and also it's dropping a little bit. Now, this pandemic year we've had, the ratings were down for the college football playoff national championship, partially because of the pandemic. Other people had stuff to worry about, but also it was a blowout and Alabama won a national championship again. So if you're a TV executive, you're trying to balance those two things of, you know, are people really getting tired of this? Have we reached our full potential already and our money-making potential for this? And if so, is expansion the right answer so we can make more money as ESPN to advertisers and ultimately to cable providers and charging cable providers to carry the ESPN family of networks? So those are things that ESPN's got to research and talk with their, you know, lawyers and everything before they even contemplate opening up talks and acting in good faith to maybe reevaluate this contract. It's a very complicated matter. And one, by the way, ESPN behind closed doors, that stuff's just not going to leak at that point about them looking through things and doing their due diligence. You won't hear anything from the ESPN side or even things from sources for that matter until they actually start working on that contract, most likely. So we could be a little ways off before we actually hear something about ESPN being willing to you know, restructure that deal.
Yeah, it's all about those right fees at the end of the day. And if ESPN feels like it can make more money from cable providers, as you said, like, I think that is the onus on expansion. And before moving on to the actual scenarios, you mentioned kind of reaching other markets and teams getting, and fans maybe getting bored of the same rerun. I think it's important to note something you had in your article. Of the 28 bids, the first 7 years of the 14 playoff, Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, Ohio State, Notre Dame make up the large majority of those. Only one of those schools, Oklahoma, is west of the Mississippi. So if you potentially open things up in the college football playoff, you bring in those West Coast markets again, potentially. You bring in some of the schools in the Big 12. You bring in some of the schools in the Big 10 that are maybe outside of the traditional kind of East Coast areas. So it's a really compelling conversation. And I guess moving on to the actual scenarios that you laid out in your article, what you did was look at 16, 12, 10, 8, and 6 to see what would work best and what wouldn't work. At the top, Brandon, do you feel like there's a couple scenarios talking to people you know around the country that just kind of seem like non-starters from the beginning?
You know, I think the 16 team is just way too much too early. Now, that's not to say these people are sitting there going, oh, 16 teams, maybe we'll get there one day. We'll talk expansion upon the expansion in maybe 10 years. The talk among the decision makers, or I should say the people with some voices in the voting process for this, the college football playoff, is they don't want to do expansion for expansion's sake to the point where we just go, all right, we expanded to 6 or 8 teams. Are you guys happy now? And then they open themselves up for criticism. And 10 years down the road, they go, oh, that 6-team playoff field isn't quite working out the way we wanted to. So let's expand it again. They're looking at something where they're going to go maybe a half step further than the step that everybody's expecting them to take based off what I'm hearing. And so that would mean probably a 10 or 12 team playoff. Not to say that the A team idea has been completely phased out, but I believe from the conversations I've had that it is unlikely we see a 16 team or a 6 team field. And it's probably going to be an 8, 10, or 12, but more likely a 10 or 12 team format.
I think that makes sense. When you think about a 16 team format, there's the possibility, let's say you include all the conference champions, that you have a Ball State in the playoffs. And like, no offense to Ball State as a program, but that would be a bye for whoever was the number one seed there. That's just like a game I don't think people are particularly interested in. And if you go down to 6, which is a format I've been a fan of for a long time, I really think you should reward the regular season and that teams in the 1 and 2 spot should be rewarded with a bye. That does just bring up the inevitable scenario that 6 is not expanded enough, and you will have scenarios where the 7th and 8th teams are left out and they're pissed off. And you're still going to have seasons that you're going to have entire leagues left out of the playoffs if you go the at-large berth. So it makes sense to kind of set those aside. So let's take a minute and look at the 8, the 10, and the 12-team scenarios. Brandon, starting with the 8, you lay out two different scenarios, worst and best. What scenario with an 8-team playoff do you think works best in terms of who will be included?
Yeah, I think what makes sense here in the discussions that I've had is that the idea is we have to do a playoff format where we give automatic berths to every Power 5 champion, and we guarantee also at least one spot for the top-rated Group of 5 champion. So if you take this past season, for example, if you're looking at an 8-team playoff, you would take the 5 Power 5 champions, including Oregon, out west, and in a weird year for the Pac-12, obviously, because of scheduling and the COVID-19 pandemic. But you would also reward Cincinnati in the playoff. And because of the rankings would be very important here because, one, you need to select two at-large teams, but also in this situation, Cincinnati wouldn't be the 8th team in the playoff. They would actually be the 7th team in the playoff because Oregon, the Pac-12 champion, is rated lower than Cincinnati in the college football playoff rankings. So you're not necessarily just going, let's throw a Group of 5 champion in there, and they're almost always going to be the 8th seed in an 8-team playoff. So that's the big driving point of this. It's not necessarily getting all the Power 5 champions in. It's getting the top Group of 5 champion in, but also making sure that you're not just, I guess, copy and pasting them in there on the 8 seed line every year. It's going to be very important for the rankings. And while Cincinnati is the highest ranked Group of 5 team in the college football playoff era rankings at the end of the season at number 8, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be 8th because, as I said, Oregon was not in the top 15 or even the top 20. And even though they won their conference in the Pac-12, their ranking was lower than Cincinnati. So Cincinnati's rewarded for that and gets to be bumped up. So this allows some movement to be made when you include a Group of 5 champion by going to at least 8 teams.
I'm personally a fan. I've never really been a proponent of the 8 team scenario because, as I said before, I'd like the 1 and 2 seeds to be rewarded. But if you look at 2019, which I think is a more reflective season of how rankings would work in general, you would have all the teams you expect. You'd have LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, Oklahoma, Oregon as your champions. You would have Georgia and Baylor in the playoffs as at larges. What the team you would leave out in that scenario is Wisconsin at 10-3. And I would strongly argue that a 3-loss team does not really have much of a beef in order to get in the playoff if you have that happen. They would be replaced in that scenario by Memphis at 12-1 overall. Right. That Memphis team in 2019 wasn't as good as some of the Group of 5 champions we've seen recently, at least among the kind of top half. But I think it's compelling to have that element there. And it's kind of a carrot to give those Group of 5 programs to push forward.
Yeah, I'm with you there because obviously, as you mentioned, I don't know if any 3-loss team, as you said, belongs in there, even if they had the toughest schedule in the entire country. You had 13 opportunities and you lost 3 of those games. I just don't see that. And I know a lot of people are going to be sitting out there, the cynics are going to be going, we'll expand the playoff. We're just going to have more 2 and 3-loss teams. Not necessarily. This is an opportunity for those Group of 5 teams, if they're rated high enough, and others in the at-large field, to be able to be rewarded for having 1 or 2 losses. For example, this past season in 2020 with Texas A&M, which their only loss was to Alabama, 52-24, but they really had no shot at making the playoff because they play in the same division in the SEC as Alabama.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think an 8-team playoff and the other two kind of brackets that we're going to talk about in a second also give opportunities to teams that maybe got hot at the end of the season that we haven't seen have a chance to make the playoff before. I think Oklahoma and Texas A&M are both excellent examples of that last year. They were playing their best football at season's end and were kind of left just on the doorstep of the playoff because of early season losses. And I think that would be kind of an opportunity for chaos in the playoff. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I think I'll leave that up to you, but it does add some spice to a potential playoff format. I will admit, I have never considered a 10-team playoff when we talk about expansion. It's not something I've thought of, but I think it makes a lot of sense, essentially, how you laid it out. The number 1 and number 2 seeds would have byes, and then the 9 and 8 and the 7 and 10 would play in a round of 16-ish thing, I guess, would be a way to put it.
Yeah, I would refer to it maybe as a play-in game.
Okay, I like that. Games. Little easier to say on the tongue. When you talk about a 10-team playoff format, how would you lay it out?
Yeah, as you mentioned there, top 2 seeds get a bye, the 8-9 play, 7-10 play, and those 2 games would be play-in games to play the top 2 seeds, which have a bye. So, of course, the college football playoff probably wouldn't want to call it the play-in games. They'd probably go, hey, it's the first round or the opening round like the college basketball tournament does. But very similar to the 18 field, which once you get to eight teams, the fields are very similar in the way you would go about this. Five automatic berths to the Power Five champions. You get your top group of five champion in there, one, and then you go four at-large berths based on the rankings. This isn't a situation like the college basketball committee where you just select at-large teams or whatever, and you don't know who's going to go in. These would be based on the rankings that will still be released weekly starting in, say, late October, early November. So, like, as we said, the 2020 season was very weird, but you have some very deserving teams in there, including Georgia and Cincinnati, which would face each other in a play-in game. And as we saw in the Peach Bowl, goodness gracious, what a game. Came down to the final seconds there, and the winner would have to go face number one Alabama. And then the 7-10 would be Florida at 7 and Oregon at 10. And again, Oregon being the lowest rated Power Five champion would again be the lowest rated team overall in a 10-team format, with Cincinnati being ranked ahead of them, but also conference mate Georgia. Despite, by the way, you know, Florida, or excuse me, not conference mate, but despite Georgia not winning their conference and or even their division, they're still in the playoffs. So, like I was mentioning with Texas A&M, you would have Texas A&M and Georgia, two SEC teams in there that did not win their division, and yet they're in the playoff, and that's rewarding them based on their rankings. Because as you said, A&M and Oklahoma both got hot near the end of the season, ranked fifth and sixth in the college football playoff rankings. They would very much deserve a spot in this type of field.
The 12-team format that you laid out is very similar to the 10-team format. The difference is essentially the first four seeds would get a bye in round one, and the other eight teams would play in that play-in style tournament that you talked about to get into the main field. Without kind of focusing too much on that, I'm curious, in every single one of these scenarios, you laid out a best and worst format. Why did you usually consider the worst format to be the scenario which each of the individual group of five champions were also granted automatic berths? Why do you think that's not the way to go?
Well, one, I think it, from talking to people, the games that people don't believe would be very competitive if you include all the group of five champions in there. I mean, as you mentioned, Ball State would have been in the playoff if we were have a situation like that. And goodness gracious, could you imagine Ball State even going up against Oregon? Or if, say, they even somehow upset Oregon playing number one Alabama, my goodness, talk about boring TV. And that's, listen, we talked about TV. That's what's going to drive this. It's going to be interesting matchups. And producing a playoff format that where we see every conference champion in the FBS getting in is just going to be a no-go. And sure, the group of five commissioners would maybe want that, but even they realize that's not realistic. And certainly the Power Five commissioners are not going to be on board with that at all. And the only compromise there is to say one top group of five champion. And if your team just so happens to be one of the higher ranked at large teams, they'll be in the playoffs. So I just do not see that. That's a non-starter from the get-go.
Yeah, Cinderella doesn't quite have the same kind of feeling in college football as it does in college basketball. It's just like the sports are totally different. The depth charts are totally different. The talent base is totally different. It just doesn't work quite the same way. Before I let you go, Brandon, the 8-team format, I think, works really nicely, or the 6-team format works really nicely, because you could just essentially have the six New Year's Six Bowls host a game every year. When you think about kind of the layout of this moving forward, and maybe this is too early to speculate, would you assume some of these play-in games maybe happen at a home site or a neutral site, and then they move into kind of the New Year's Six games as the host for the later round games? Like, how would you kind of see that working?
Yeah, I would think, you know, this hasn't really been discussed, but from what I understand, but the understanding is kind of, we are going to have some on-campus games if it's eight or above. I don't think we'll see that with six teams, but if it's eight and above, those first round games, those first games would probably certainly be at home. You're already rewarding the top two seeds with a bye, and so you wouldn't reward them again with a home playoff game, say in the second round, unless it was a bigger format. And as you mentioned, the other big thing here with the money and the bowl system, they're going to want to keep those ties to those six bowl games that are in that rotation already in the current format of the college football playoff. Another thing to consider here is the bowl system as a whole. People are going to talk about how this is going to hurt the bowl system because people aren't going to care about the other bowl games. But in the end, this is my belief, is that, listen, if you guys pay attention to this, ESPN owns a lot of the lower tier bowls. They don't just broadcast them. They own and run these bowl games. And all they do it for is to have a television event, a live event on their television networks. It's not to better the college experience. And if they say that, they're lying, and they know that. The idea, I think, is very simple here. ESPN's going to have more college football playoff games, and they would make more money off of those than broadcasting, say, the Birmingham Bowl anyway. So all they would do is, if they're adding, say, four games or whatever, they would probably just get rid of four games that they already own already and are probably losing money on, just for to have live events. And they would make more money. Actually, they would actually, in the end, make more money by having the same amount of games, but they would have higher quality games. And I think we've talked a lot about, listen, you hate football if you don't like all these bowl games. At some point, we're bubbling this thing out so far where we're letting five-win teams into the bowl system during a regular year. That's got to stop if you want these bowl games to matter. I mean, we talk about the watchability of these things. I mean, no one wants to watch a game on December 19th between a five-win team and a six-win team, especially if they're a group of five teams. It's just the fact of the matter. Even if nothing else is on television at that time. And listen, I think ESPN, in a heartbeat, if they actually just look at the numbers, which they're going to do, they're going to go, oh, let's just get rid of these four games that we run and own, so we can get extra playoff games, get extra money. It's going to be that simple. And sure, some bowl games will die, but these are not going to be the type of bowl games that have a lot of history. We look at lower tier bowls, even the Sun Bowl, that has a lot of history, you know. The game in Montgomery, Alabama, not so much. And those will be the ones that die.
Yeah, I will say I would trade a 1-8 seed at a neutral site for the roofclaim.com Boca Raton Bowl, which will be on ESPN next year. So it'll be really interesting times for college football. There's a pretty big date in June when the College Football Playoff Committee will meet. There's no guarantee anything happens there. Especially given how glacially some of this expansion talk has happened over the years. But it's a really fascinating subject to follow. I encourage everybody to go to 247sports.com, read Brandon's article on best case, worst case, what an expanded college football playoff will look like. He lays everything out there, goes into really strong detail. And Brandon, thanks so much for joining us. For Brandon Marcello and myself and our producer Lance Glenn, this is Chris Hummer with the College Football Daily. Thanks so much for listening.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.